We're continuing to follow the aftermath of the largest earthquake to hit Japan in recorded history. Today, President Obama assured the earthquake-ravaged country that the U.S. stands ready to help. The U.S. has a huge military presence in Japan. Additional ships are now heading there. And we're well aware of colleagues who are trying to reach friends on U.S. bases in northern Japan and having trouble doing that. The president opened his news conference today with this statement.
First and foremost, our thoughts and our prayers are with the people of Japan. This is a potentially catastrophic disaster, and the images of destruction and flooding coming out of Japan are simply heartbreaking. Japan is, of course, one of our strongest and closest allies, and this morning I spoke with Prime Minister Kan. On behalf of the American people, I conveyed our deepest condolences, especially the victims and their families, and I offered our Japanese friends whatever assistance is needed.
Of course, the quake and subsequent tsunami had different impacts in different parts of the country. Earlier today, we spoke with Daniel Krieger, a New York Times contributor, and asked him where he was when the quake struck.
In Osaka, in my apartment. I didn't feel the shaking, but I know other people who did.
Oh, so Osaka had a different experience. And what's going on now?
Basically, now it's just a matter of dealing with the aftermath, the fire, the constant stream of aftershocks, tsunami warnings, damaged structures, people who are homeless, no power. And it seems that the Japanese government so far is doing a really good job. They've had so much practice with this type of disaster readiness.
Well, I'm sure you've been monitoring, as other reporters have in Tokyo, you know, the images coming from Sendai and on the coast. Is there any feeling of, you know, the people have their families there, their relatives there, even if they're in Tokyo or other cities where there's not as much damage? Is there any sense of panic?
Yeah, and a feeling of helplessness at being unable to reach people. I've spoken to several people who have been unable to get in touch. So I know a few people who are really sitting on the edge of their seat.
Daniel, thank you so much, and keep safe there.
All right. Thanks a lot.
We also spoke with Masumi Kodooko. She's from Sendai, the city closest to the epicenter, but she works now at the Japanese Association of Greater Boston. Her sister called her from Tokyo when the quake hit early this morning, our time. But she also has relatives, including her mother, living on the coast near the epicenter, and we asked if she'd been able to reach them.
The area got the earthquake. The power line was, cut, and the town was washed out, and the road was washed out, and it's a disaster.
Yeah.
And everybody is trying to contact with the family. But I think, nobody can do right now.
Tell us about the coastal village where your mom lives. What's it like?
The town called Minami Sanrikucho was hit by huge tsunami 50 years ago from a Chile earthquake.
From the Chilean earthquake, there was a tsunami 50 years ago.
Yeah, and the town was, destroyed once, but, after a long time, and they made up. And this time, I think it's, people say it's more than Chile tsunami.
That's Masumi Kodooko from Sendai, Japan, living in Boston now. Well, by the way, the runway at the Sendai Airport, we've been reporting that it's submerged, covered with all these items that were picked up by the tsunami. But there's a process known as liquefaction, which is caused by the intense shaking of the tremor, and that's turned parts of the ground there at the Sendai Airport to liquid. How is it that when you look at these pictures out of Japan, everything didn't fall, everything didn't just turn to liquid? Stephen Mayen is director of the Pacific Earthquake Engineering Research Center at the University of California at Berkeley. And Stephen, we want to ask you first about reports that are coming out about this nuclear power plant. We've been reporting there's a plant, it's I think the Fukushima No. 1 power plant. 2,800 residents were evacuated after the cooling system failed at that plant, and we were getting reports that workers there were scrambling to restore the cooling water supply. The Associated Press has now just sent across an alert saying that pressure is rising at the nuclear reactor after the cooling system failure. I know that this is all just coming across, just happening, but have you got your eye on the power plants there?
Yeah, this is a very serious concern, of course, for the Japanese as well as for the rest of the world as to how to design nuclear power plants properly in the event of earthquakes or other natural disasters. Yesterday, it was reported that all of them had done well. and had shut down safely. So this recent announcement is a little bit disconcerting.
Right.
But hopefully they have it all in under control. The nuclear power operators go through drills all the time for how to deal with such things. And hopefully what they have prepared for is something that they allows them to deal with the current situation that they see.
Well, but take us to Tokyo. I spoke earlier. I said it was 180 miles from the epicenter. It's more like 240.
Right.
And we saw, I mean, we spoke to people who talked about this violent shaking. I know that many of these buildings are new. How are they being built so that they aren't just tumbling down?
Yeah, this is a very good question. Japan has, as well as many parts of the world, very frequent earthquakes, and so engineers have put their minds to how to do this. In many places of the world where you don't have earthquakes, people make the structures to be fairly strong and durable against wind and the weather, but they're built in a way that if you bend them, they would break like a piece of chalk, so that they're fairly stiff and strong but brittle. And so in earthquake country, we try to design structures which are ductile, much like if you take a paper clip, you can bend it, and at some point it gives way, but it doesn't break, and you can bend it over, and it will stay in that displaced shape. So the idea is to allow the structure to sway, but not to break. Basically, for these very large earthquakes, and an 8.9 earthquake is a great or mega quake, as some people have been calling this one, and generally speaking, you would expect to have a fair amount of damage, buildings out on the verge of collapse if the designs were done just to the minimum requirements of the code. And so I think the systems are intended to be have this ductility, as I mentioned, and it seems that most of the new structures were able to go through the earthquakes. But they do sway back and forth. Tall buildings especially sway back and forth quite aggressively and frighten people understandably.
And, of course, in Sendai in the northeast, much closer to the epicenter, but also when we see buildings collapse there, you say they may not have this sort of ductile structure, this bendable steel.
So a lot of these ideas have only been developed fully in the last two or three decades.
Yeah.
And so if you have an older structure like some of the unreinforced masonry structures in New Zealand or in California, or some of the older concrete structures in Japan or in the United States, those are particularly vulnerable to earthquakes. And the Japanese have been working to retrofit those, as we have been in California as well.
And we know, we only have about a minute left, but we know there's a different kind of earthquake, the strike slip earthquake, more of a crack than this subduction earthquake, which is a long major rumbling well below the ground surface. Just, you know, in the U.S., do you think cities that are more prone to any kind of earthquake are ready for this kind of a thing, have the kind of buildings that are needed?
Yeah. Well, I think the preparedness is greatest where the recent earthquakes have happened. The earthquakes are on people's minds. And so engineers do take into account the types of ground motions you have in a particular location to design the structures for those kinds of things. We don't have the type of earthquake in California that you saw in Sendai, but we do have earthquakes very much like what you saw in Kobe.
Yep, we're going to count our blessings for that, Stephen. We've got to go now, but thank you so much.
Have a good
Stephen
day.
Stephen Mahan, Pacific Earthquake Engineering Research Center in Berkeley, California. We'll continue to follow this story for you. Here Now is a production of WBUR Boston in association with the BBC World Service and PRI. I'm Robin Young. Please join us then, Here and Now.